In Alabama, the founder of the Seven Deadly Sins Biker Club is convicted in the death of seven people and a dog. In Louisiana, a man is sentenced to 30 years behind bars after terrorizing his girlfriend on a trip to Pensacola Beach, Florida. And in Kansas, prosecutors detail killings orchestrated by the God's Misfits group. These stories and more coming at you today, Thursday, September 19th, on Real Life Real Crime Daily, and I'm Jim Chapman.
I'm Woody Everton. It's Thursday.
It is Thirsty Thursday.
Yep, and Shane, my buddy from Wisconsin, a lot of lifers know him.
Shane McBride.
Yep, and they'll be in this afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be Thirsty Thursday for sure.
It'll be Thirsty Thursday, Thirsty Friday.
The whole time, my liver would be begging him to leave. But yeah, Wisconsin, those people drink, boy.
Really?
Did you know that?
No, I wouldn't think.
They did a study on the states that drink the most, and I think Louisiana would be number one. Wisconsin's number one.
You're kidding.
Nope. Dead
I would
serious.
Never guess
this
that.
It's part of their culture. Great people.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll call it the Louisiana of the North, right? Everybody's so awesome and cool, and they like to party and have a good time.
Wow. I didn't know that. It's an interesting stat. Yep. Wisconsin.
Well, that's how it is up in Wisconsin.
That's it.
And let's get down to some true crime time for Thirsty Thursday.
All right. And we're going to start off in Alabama.
Alabama.
And a man who co-founded a biker gang called the Seven Deadly Sins has been convicted of gunning down seven people, some of who were members of that motorcycle club, and a dog. Frederick Rogers, 26, admitted to the killing of four men among the seven victims, investigators testified at the trial. Jurors recommended a life sentence without the possibility of parole on Wednesday after less than 3 hours of deliberations. Prosecutors wanted the death penalty. Rogers and his accomplice, John Michael Legg, who is 23, were arrested in Oregon when the Marion County deputies pulled them over more than 2 weeks after the massacre. Deputies arrived at a home in early June 2020 and found three people dead in a garage. One of them opened fire, according to reports. There were four more people dead in other parts of the home. The victims were identified as Tammy England Muzzy, Emily Payne, Dakota Green, Roger Jones Jr., and Jeremy Roberts, as well as William Hodgen, who was only 18. Mm. All seven had been shot multiple times, and so was a dog. Green, the youngest victim, had also been stabbed. He was 17. As prosecutors showed hundreds of crime scene photos in court, Rogers shook in his seat. Authorities recovered dozens of spent casings at the scene, which had been set on fire in an alleged attempt to destroy the evidence. Legg, who has not gone on trial yet, faces additional escape charges after he tried to escape the Morgan County Jail. He did so while wearing a trustee uniform, the clothes of another inmate assigned to oversee fellow prisoners. Seven Deadly Sins biker gang. So when you were running the streets around this area as a law enforcement detective, did you ever deal with biker gangs?
Yeah, man. When you're reading that, it reminded me that I have not told the story on the original, kind of touchy subject. There was 1%ers, with that.
Yeah.
So 1%ers, y'all, you see, everybody loves to ride bikes and they'll get their own jackets and shit like that and have their own patches. And some of them are just like cops, the Blue Angels, right? Mm-hmm. If you ever see one, a biker or guys wearing vests with their patches and they have a one with the percent sign behind it, that's true outlaw bikers and this like Hell's Angels and Banditos and et cetera, mm-hmm. et cetera. So those, and they just don't conform. They don't give a fuck. And long story short, there was a small town in this parish that had a biker shop. And we got word that and they sold bikes, used bikes, right? But we got word that they were getting in stolen bikes and chopping them up and making bikes out of the stolen parts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we ended up doing a, you know, search warrant and doing arrests, and they were one percenters, and somehow his charges went away. and the one guy was vice president of, I'm not gonna say which one it is, probably the second largest 1%er club in the United States of America.
Really?
Yeah, he was a bachelor player. Yeah, not people you want to mess with, because like that dude, yeah, they will kill you.
Yeah, I knew a couple of banditos, actually.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? I sat in the barn and drank with someone when I was on leave from the army, and they bought me drinks and shit, but they were 1%ers. And that's how I got started. Biker gangs after World War II, the guys that came home, they only had that bond from being on the battlefield and stuff together. And then they were kind of not so much anti-government or whatever, but they bonded together and they got the used Harleys from the army that were used during the war. And that's how the biker gangs originated.
Huh. Yep. Interesting.
So let's tell you about another group in Kansas. Prosecutors tell how Kansas women were killed by members of God's Misfits group. And this is long and lengthy, but it's a crazy ass story. Veronica Butler, 27, and Jillian Kelly, 39, were found dead in April after they disappeared the previous month. The two Kansas women who were found dead after disappearing under suspicious circumstances in March were allegedly killed by two separate suspects, while two other suspects helped cover up the crime, prosecutors said in a recent court brief. Veronica Butler, 27, and Jillian Kelly, 39, were reported missing after their car was found and abandoned by the road in rural Oklahoma in March. So they were found dead on April 14th, a day after police arrested Tiffany Adams, 54, her boyfriend Tad Burt Cullum, 43, Cole Twombly, 50, and Kara Twombly, 44, in connection with the investigation. Paul Grice, a fifth suspect, was arrested later that month. All are charged with murder, among several other offenses. And this week, a brief submitted by prosecutors revealed the details surrounding the attacks on the women and what authorities say was the cover-up that followed. The brief, in support of consolidating a preliminary hearing for the five suspects, was shared by KWCH, a local news station. And in the brief, which was submitted in court on September 9th, prosecutors alleged Grice stabbed Butler and Cullum stabbed Kelly. In the process, Grice sliced his own hand. The brief alleges that Adams purchased a burner phones used by the suspects to coordinate the killings. She also bought stun guns, one of which was found in the burial site, and bought yellow straps that were used to wrap a freezer where the victims' bodies were found. Crazy. The brief further alleges Cullum discussed with the owner of the property where the bodies were recovered and gained permission to dig a hole the day before the killing. But the land owner has not been linked to the investigation by detectives. But on the morning of the killings, Cole and Kara Twombly acted as lookouts. And after the killings, the brief alleges Cullum and Grice drove the bodies to the burial site where they both discarded their clothing and Grice discarded his knife. Investigators recovered Butler's DNA from Grice's buried clothing and Kelly's DNA from Cullum's clothes in this all in the filings. Y'all. The killings stemmed from a custody dispute between Butler and the paternal grandmother of her children. Adams, according to an affidavit, Adams hated and despised Butler and wanted her dead. And Prosecutors alleged all five suspects, who were members of an anti-government religious group, God's Misfits, had their individual roles in the killings. But the God's Misfits, the group, has denounced the crime. All five suspects have been charged with murder, kidnapping, and conspiracy to commit murders. We don't have any information on how they pled. I imagine they pled not guilty. But it kind of goes back to it, right? These groups, the anti-government extremist groups.
Yes.
The people that you pull them up in the window, you pull them over and they hold up a piece of paper that says, we don't have to, answer. We don't follow. We believe in the Constitution. But we don't believe in how you're enacting the Constitution. And they'll have make license plates and all that stuff.
Well, and that's right. They call those sovereign citizens.
Sovereign citizens.
Yeah. So, and we actually reported this original report, and course, at the time we thought they were shot, these two young ladies, and come to find out they were stabbed.
Yeah, and how much more premeditation can you have than you dig the hole the day ahead of time?
Yeah,
and you buy burner cells and all that stuff. So I don't know.
Well, they're gonna get what's coming to them now.
Yep,
for sure.
God's Misfits.
That's it. So we're going to go to, we're going to go to Louisiana.
Louisiana.
And we're going to talk about a 21-year-old Louisiana man, awfully young, to get sentenced to 30 years in state prison after he sexually terrorized his 18-year-old girlfriend during a trip to Pensacola Beach in 2023. Now, I've been to Pensacola
many times.
Ton of times.
Many times.
It's a very popular place for people from Louisiana. It's 4 hours away, easy to get to and easy to get from. So Circuit Court Judge Linda Nobles, she sentenced Richard Tommy Caraball to 3 decades in Florida's Department of Corrections, because that's, I guess, where all this occurred, after he pleaded no contest, to 2 counts of sexual battery, false imprisonment, domestic battery by strangulation, tampering with a victim, and aggravated battery causing great bodily harm. Tommy Caraball and his then girlfriend went to Pensacola Beach for a vacation in May of 2023 when he brutally terrorized her over the course of 8 hours by repeatedly battering, strangling, and raping her twice. Right. Some of the photographic evidence presented at court during sentencing depicted bruising in the shape of Tommy's fingers on the victim's neck. That's what we call a clue.
Giveaway.
Because of repeated strangling, the victim's face was unrecognizable due to the extent of the injuries sustained. So this asshole beat the shit out of her. Pretty much. The victim faced Tommy during his sentencing and said, I survived that night because I'm strong. You didn't break me. I will move on from this and go back to college. I hope you regret what you did to me every day while you're sitting in prison. Good for her.
Pretty.
That took a lot more nerve, I should say, than people think to do that and stand up in front of someone who damn near killed you. And this piece of shit is going to spend the next 30 years thinking about a dumbass decision he made on his vacation.
8 hours of beating and torturing and raping.
Raping.
I guess her people raised the right to stand up and fight. So many people get sucked into that domestic violence circle, and at least she stood up, like you said. So I don't know. It's just crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
I know.
All right, let's go to Fort Payne. I believe that's in Indiana, if I'm correct. No, Alabama. Alabama in Fort Payne, Alabama. A suspect has been arrested in connection to a burglary on Thursday night in Fort Payne. And according to Fort Payne Police Department, a man was reported inside a home around 10 p.m. on Godfrey Avenue. Now, when the cops arrived at the home, the suspect ran like a little bitch, and the victims inside the home were able to give the suspect's description. Now, following a lookout call in the area, it's basically a bolo y'all be on the lookout for, this guy, the authorities found an individual matching the suspect's description on Sanders Avenue. The suspect has been identified as Jeremiah Daniel Shero, 27, of Fort Payne. Police said Shero had items in his possession that were taken from the burglarized residence. And according to the Fort Payne police chief, David Davis, Shero was found wearing children's clothing he had taken from the residence. Now, Mika Eiler lives in the home with her three children and took to social media to describe what happened that night. Hillier said she was at work when she got the news of the incident. She said her ex-husband was there with the kids when he noticed one of their daughter's doors was locked. He eventually got in. He found the room in disarray. He looked under the bed to find Shiro hiding there, wearing clothes belonging to their young daughter and his ex-wife's shoes. And when he looked under the bed, in this quotation, y'all, when he looked under the bed, there was a man wearing my children's clothes. He escaped the house. He was wearing my children's training bra. He was wearing my daughter's pink skirt, Hiller said. And in a 4-minute video posted to TikTok, Hiller shared her story and how her family is still trying to cope. Of all the rooms in my house, he had to hide in the room under a little girl's bed. My kids haven't slept. I haven't slept. Nobody slept. There'll be justice, Hiller said. Shiro has been charged with burglary, in the third degree, and public intoxication. He's being held in Fort Payne Police Department jail waiting to be transferred, blah, blah, blah. And the investigation is ongoing, and he could face more charges.
Wow.
Ah, come on, man. Yeah, first of all, he had to go into Weiser and T to get our shoes.
Yeah.
But then he must have been a little dude.
It had to be.
It's got to be a preteen training bra and
what is
skirt.
What's wrong with this guy?
He hide under the bed. Wow. He'd be tossing salads.
He's about to really dress up.
Yeah.
Right. For people. Speaking of dressing up, we all like to go see Santa Claus, right?
Right.
There is in North Carolina, actually Cherokee. Have you ever been to Cherokee?
Absolutely.
I have, right next door to
Gatlinburg and all that. That's when you drive through Cates Cove. And
very fun place, from what I recall. I was a kid then, but I might go back.
I took my family there a couple of years ago. And, it was actually during the winter time, so probably around Christmas, and it was snowing and shit.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That would be nice. Well, this is not a good story, unfortunately. In Cherokee, North Carolina, a 78-year-old former Santa Claus impersonator was arrested recently for sexually abusing and inappropriately touching children. And look, when you see this guy's picture, I'll post it on the Facebook page. He looks like Santa Claus, man. Yeah. He might be the most realistic looking Santa I've ever seen. The Cherokee One Feather, they report that the Cherokee Nation Police Department took Beaver Slight into custody on August 29th and charged him with two counts of aggravated sexual abuse, two counts of sexual abuse, two counts of abusive sexual conduct, three counts of offensive touching, and two counts of contributing to the delinquency of minors. Slight worked as Santa Claus at Santa's Funland Park and Zoo in Cherokee. The abuse lasted from March of 2023 to March of 2024 at a home behind the theme park. One of the victims was reportedly only 5 years old.
Mm.
Slight was reportedly a customer of Caroline Rowland, who is accused of running a sex trafficking ring.
There you go.
Rowland is accused of beating a 5-year-old child and breaking their hand. She also allegedly slammed the child, or he also slammed the child on the floor, knocking them unconscious. The victim needed CPR. after that and surgery, and doctors found additional injuries on the child while they were in the intensive care unit following the procedure. Slight reportedly does not have a prior criminal record.
Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with a subject? Is your child ahead, not getting challenged enough in class? IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting to each child, meeting them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to be curious and empowers them how to choose to learn. Now, Cindy used IXL in the classroom as a teacher and now uses it to homeschool our youngest son in the ninth grade. The videos are what she finds that benefits him most in math because he's a very visual learner. The perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum, IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational game lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving, and everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. Instant grading, helpful progress reporting. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Flexible and personalized. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. It's fun for kids, and kids love IXL's positive feedback, awards, and educational games. And it's trustworthy. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Nor does he work at Santa's Land anymore. I would fucking hope not.
Let me ask you something. I didn't hear anything. Now, he's a pedophile. He's done all these kids, right?
Yeah.
Raped them and shit.
Yeah.
And he got arrested, right?
Right.
But that story can't be complete.
What are we missing?
Because I was confronted and told very boldly by Agravino that everybody that is arrested for pedophilia has to have child porn. they didn't say anything about child porn.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, he had no prior criminal record.
He comes back on the next episode and says that him and Ziegler did extensive research of everybody arrested.
Ever?
This is my point. And everybody ever arrested for pedophilia, and they all had child porn. And I said, you're full of fucking shit. Probably 40% of my cases of people I arrested didn't have any child porn, and they're child pedophiles. But yeah, there are some people out there that believe that you cannot be a pedophile unless you have child porn. I'm here to set the record straight, people. It's not true.
Yeah. That's right.
And shame on that dude for using, you know, there you got bad cops and bad teachers and bad people, bad preachers and coaches. And you got all these people mm-hmm. that use their position of authority, but using position Santa Claus. Fucked up.
Yeah. And you're as a mother and father, you're bringing your kid to see Santa Claus and he's a freaking pedophile.
And your kid and your kids thinking, hey, I'm hanging out with Santa Claus. You know, can you believe that? Yeah. Anyway, well, that is a horrible story, y'all. And I'm going to give you another horrible story because this is just a horrible story day. The let's go to H-Town, Houston. And a Houston man is now wanted after being charged with killing his children's mother at a birthday party Thursday night. Now, Jalen J. Foreman, 27, has been charged with murder and is not in custody at this time, y'all. The Houston Police Department said it happened on Loxley Road near Tidwell Drive and Wayside Drive shortly after 8:30 p.m. The victim, 25-year-old Jalen Whitlock, was celebrating the birthday of one of her two children, who are 6 and 2 years old. The group was at a town home celebrating, along with the woman's boyfriend. And during the party, witnesses say Foreman arrived at the home and began yelling at someone. Then he pulled out a gun and began firing shots at the house. Whitlock was hit by the gunfire. Nobody else in the home was injured, but the children and boyfriend witnessed the attack. Now, when HPD officers and paramedics arrived at the scene, Whitlock was found unresponsive in the doorway and pronounced dead. Now, Foreman ran like a little bitch, and he left the scene in a white Chevrolet Tahoe after the shooting. And anyone with information on the whereabouts of Jalen Foreman or the wanted vehicle is urged to contact HPD Homicide Division at 713-308-3600. Or you can speak anonymously to Crime Stoppers at 713-222-TIPS.
Wow.
Right? Killed it. I mean, fuck, man. Yeah, people don't think about it. It's bad. It's bad that lady. That lady's dead. But he did it in front of her fucking kids, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he took their mama. That's horrible. And then they have to live it for the rest of their life. That image in their head. The last image of their, probably the person they love the most.
That's right. Well, we're going to give you how about a feel good story since then? And I came across this story and thought it was worth reporting. And I'm going to bring you to Massachusetts and some police officers in Massachusetts who have really come up with an innovative way to reach out to the community and improve the relations between the public and police officers and things of that nature. So we'll get into it. Now, if you're in Chicopee, I think it's Chicopee, Massachusetts, you may notice a rather unexpected police vehicle making the rounds, and that is an ice cream police vehicle. It's an ice cream truck. The truck was the brainchild of Officer Travis Ordworn of the Chicopee Police Department. One of my main goals was to try to bridge the gap between police work, our department, and our community. After borrowing an ice cream truck from another police department for a few community events, Ordworn thought Chicopee could benefit from one as well. He took the idea of a department ice cream truck to his chief, who thought it was a great idea. They found a used truck on Facebook Marketplace in 2022, and using the money seized from asset forfeiture, they were able to fix it up and get it ready for the road. Once the truck was ready to roll, the Chicopee community stepped in. They started getting donations from local businesses to wrap the truck and then provide ice cream for kids in the community for free, he said. The truck now reads, "To protect and serve ice cream."
That's awesome.
Since then, the truck has been to more than 50 events in Chicopee and is often found patrolling the city's parks. The guys go to the parks. We go to the pools in the summertime. Just the kids come out. They love getting the ice cream, he said. At community events, other organizations will often provide ice cream for the police department, which the officers then distribute to the kids. This, he says, is another way for businesses to show involvement with the police and the community. The ice cream truck helps officers connect with children who might otherwise associate the department with negativity. It's just a way to break down the barrier to get kids to come over and interact with us more and realize we're only there to help them. For many children in Chicopee, they only see police when we're coming to their house for a crisis call. So to be able to interact with us in a positive way, whether it's walking on the street or seeing us at the park with the truck, it just allows them to see us doing positive things for them. We don't always want to be on the negative side when they're calling us. So far, the reception for the ice cream truck has been positive, except from the local ice cream truck man. He ends up somehow being on our routes for giving out free ice cream. So obviously the kids come to us, Ordjorn says with a laugh. Ordjorn thinks other police departments should look into similar ventures. The ice cream truck makes it so police officers are more approachable and kids see us in a different light. And you know, Woody,
really,
I think genius. That is something that was worth cool. talking about today.
Super cool looking thing.
And I will post, I have a picture of the actual ice cream truck. It's really cool. But look, man, I think those things are really needed in all communities, especially in these days and times.
It's a genius. I'm going to tell you why. From a law enforcement standpoint, and it's unfortunate. A lot of times you're in uniform, you'll be somewhere and a kid will be acting up or whatever, and a parent will be like, if you don't behave, I'm going to get that cop to arrest you. And the kids just get bad images of cops. And then, or you're showing up at their house and arresting their mom and daddy's in domestic violence situations and what have you. But the to give them a good memory before they grow up, and you might never, might not know what happens. It might be a homicide case later on and they'll be able to relate to you in a positive way.
That's
and
right.
Tell you some stuff. And I've actually had stuff like that happen. But it generally is from the kids from the juvenile prison I worked at that I dealt with as adults, but they trusted me, right?
Because right.
that goodwill. That's a great story, man. It's a genius. I think Springfield, is the Springfield Police Department, Jimmy Jones used to buy X amount of ice cream sandwiches for like the 4th of July, and he would stop people, have like a roadblock and hand out ice cream sandwiches, you know, just all everybody. And then I think it might've been Killian years ago. I forget it was the chief, and they get X amount of turkeys donated. And on around Thanksgiving, they would stop people, pull them over and give them a turkey.
Yeah. Those things are awesome. And look, the importance of community involvement and between the police and the public cannot be understated. I'm very passionate about that because I know a lot of these law enforcement officers and I know how good of people they are.
Right.
And I also know what the perception of them is from some of the community.
Yeah.
And those little things like that, there's no telling how far that goes, especially the kids.
Never going to know.
Yeah. Right?
And it may influence the kids to become cops themselves.
Nailed it. That's right.
I'm going to tell you something. Cops don't do it to get rich.
No.
And
God, no.
And if you get paid,
it's ridiculous.
Paid for the bullshit that you had to put up with. But you do it to help protect and serve because you want to. Most of them, the good ones do.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great story.
Yep.
All right. Well, let me tell you, this is kind of a crazy ass story, Jim. So there was a 48-year-old mom who was arrested by the Pittsburgh Bureau of Police and now faces charges, including receiving stolen property and endangering the welfare of children. The Pittsburgh Bureau of Police has launched an extensive review. after an officer inadvertently tased a 10-year-old girl while responding to but it was a hostage situation. But the incident occurred on Thursday, September 12th, when the officers were attempting to rescue the girl who was being held hostage at knife point by her mother at the time. And it's crazy. The officers encountered the hostage situation after initially being flagged down shortly after 3:30 p.m. local time by a man on Knox Avenue who claimed a woman had just stolen his Chevy Equinox. And police said witnesses saw a woman pull a driver from a vehicle and drive off in the car. Well, what kind of man just pulled out of his Chevy? I'm not going to throw shit on the deed. It may have been old or something. All right, after finding the man's car a half mile away on Brownsville Road, police then located the woman who had two children with her on a nearby street. As the police approached her, the woman pulls a knife and held the children, a 4-year-old boy and a 10-year-old girl, at knife point. Right? Your own kids. Police identified the woman as 48-year-old Gwendolyn Gilmore. The 10-year-old is Gilmore's daughter. The boy's identity is unclear. And the release said that he is also her child, but somebody else said it's her nephew. In the CBS affiliate KDKA reported, citing the complaint, that as Gilmore held the two children at knife point, an officer held up a gun and told Gilmore to drop the dagger. Gilmore then wrapped her arms around the children's necks with a knife against her daughter's neck. After being told by police they were switching to tasers, that's common, right? You're trying to de-escalate the situation, like, well, we've got tasers, we're not going to shoot or whatever. Well, it didn't really matter to her. But in an attempt to disarm the female and safeguard the welfare of the children, an officer on scene deployed a taser. In the process, the 10-year-old female was inadvertently struck in the head by one of the taser prongs. Let me tell you something. Fucking tasers hurt. if you get hit in the head, they really hurt. I'll tell you, in taser training, they came out, thank God they came out after my time in uniform patrol, because freeze plus speed was my go-to shit. Yeah. The taser, I got to see one time when I was actually a detective. This guy had a knife, and they shot him. He was so high, they shot him three separate times with his tasers. I think he had on one of those Nomex suits that wasn't penetrating all the way. He kept pulling the things and saying, I wish I would quit shooting me. These things, but they have barbs on them, and they go in your skin, and electricity penetrates like that. But in taser training, they'll put like 10 cops on their knees and get them to lock arms like that, and they'll put one prong from the taser on one end of the cops in their back pocket, and the other prong on the other end of the 10 cops, just two prongs.
Yeah.
And they hit it, and every motherfucker in that line goes down.
Yeah.
They're bad, bro. That's some bad shit. But anyway, back to the story. After accidentally being tased, the girl had a seizure at the scene. I don't doubt that. And suffered a minor laceration on her scalp. And that would have been from the penetration on the bar. Officers rendered aid, and Pittsburgh EMS responded to the scene, bringing the girl to local children's hospital. And she has since been released into her relative's care, and the boy is also in care of a relative. Gilmore was arrested and taken to an area hospital for medical clearance. She has since been transported to the county jail, where she faces charges including theft by unlawful taking, I guess the guy's Chevy Equinox, receiving stolen property, and endangering the welfare of children. The Pittsburgh Bureau of Police reviews all use of force incidents that occur in the city and involve Pittsburgh police officers. And as such, an extensive review of the officer's tactics from yesterday will be conducted to ensure reasonable force was used. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe. I don't know. I guess he thought she was going to actually, or she was making a motion to actually kill the kid, and so he deployed the taser.
Yeah. Speaking of, shocking and trying out tasers and stuff like that, I'll tell you a quick story. I had a friend that we grew up together, very good friends, and he's a hunter and hunted a lot of duck. Loved duck hunting, had two black labs. And one day I'm at his house, and he had an electric fence. And he said, I need to test this to make sure that it's not too electric. I don't want to kill my dogs, obviously. But they were chasing birds and stuff like that, jumping the fence. They were beautiful black labs. And so he sets it up and everything, and he says, all right, we're gonna test it together. I said, okay. So he said, hold my hand, and I'm going to touch the fence.
Yeah.
Let's just say that shit was up way too high, Woody Overton. I think we both blew all the way across the yard, and I ain't never, it felt like getting punched really hard.
Fuck with electricity, boy. I don't even like to fuck with a fuse box or anything. That, when I was working in the plants one time, I was in Alabama and, Montgomery at the GE plant, and it was sweeping up, the shift was over, and they had a welding line running, and I had sprayed off the stuff. And yeah. Dumbass me, I went to pick up the weld line. Maybe it had a cut in. I don't know what. If something type of electrical line. And I grabbed that some bitch and it knocked me like 10 feet. And another one, when I was a kid, a teenager, we didn't have cell phones. My parents had a house phone downstairs and they put in a kid's line upstairs because there were six of us.
Yeah.
And I was on the phone and fucking lightning hit the line and knocked me.
No out. Way.
Knocked me out. And my mom had to take me to the ER and stuff. Yeah. Probably what's wrong with me today.
He could be. Look, I've been shot by light sockets more than once, and I'm not good with electricity either.
I mess with it. Nope.
Yeah.
And now it's off topic, but I used to climb trees for deer hunting and shit and get up 40 feet and all that stuff. And I fell out of one time, that old homemade climbing stand, and I don't do it anymore. And then people that hunt with me put up these lockable stands and all that shit for bow hunters. If I get them hunting out of it,
yeah.
I'm not doing it.
You can stay right
over there in that condo blind stand, and it's got a metal staircase on it. I'm not doing it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm too old and not jokingly, but I ever tell you about hauling dead bodies out on four wheelers? People bow hunting, bro, falling out of stands, and their families would call them in missing. It's late at night, and by the time the detectives get involved, and then like, okay, what does he normally do? Well, they go deer hunting. Where's the lease? And you have to go ride the lease and find somebody else to lease could tell you where their stands were and stuff like that. Two different people. One fell out and broke his neck.
Oh, wow.
And then the other one actually had a safety harness on and fell out. But didn't have the strength to get back in the tree. And he'd been like 11 hours and he died from hanging upside down.
No way.
Yep. So now they make the safety harnesses where they have a foothold. You can get your foot into it and hold yourself upright. But I think this dude was too out of shape to do that.
Yeah.
Yep. Hold both of them out on the front of a four wheeler like a dead deer.
Oh man, that's horrible.
Yeah, that's.
I never thought about that, but that's
Fuck that. I ain't doing it. And I tell them if you gonna hunt me, you gonna hunt them motherfuckers. You gonna have all safety harness on, because I ain't coming to get you.
Well, there you have it. All I got for today.
That's all I got too. Y'all have a great weekend and love and appreciate y'all and all that good podcaster shit.
That's right. And we'll see you back here next Tuesday. And until next time, I'm Jim Chapman.
And I'm Woody Everton.
And we're your host of Real Life, Real Crime Daily. Peace.